Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Welcome to another Highbury Squad, where I am pretty sure every single Gooner on the show today will be very happy. We do have a very special guest on the show as well, who isn't particularly happy, but you'll hear from her in just a little bit. She's a Chelsea fan. In the meantime, there's no better way to kick off the show than saying hello to my podcast brother and sister, Kevin Campbell and Amanda. Hello, Gooners.
Hello. Welcome back, Soph. We've missed you. I've had to part with him. So thank you for coming back.
Well, you know, every now and again, put in the odd appearance. Super Kev, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much, Sophie.
All right, awesome. Well, let's kick off. We had a fantastic result over the weekend. And our very special guest today actually said, as soon as she came on, she said, I can't believe that I've agreed to do a podcast with a bunch of Arsenal folks on a Monday after that defeat over the weekend. She has covered football for many, many years. We've spoken to a lot of great women in the game. She has done a bunch of stuff on Sky Sports, worked for Real Madrid TV, covered the European Championships, World Cups, has worked for ESPN here in the US as well. She can currently be heard on TalkSport Radio, BBC Five Live, and she's part of the Premier League's global channel. Please welcome broadcast journalist and football presenter and Chelsea fan to the show, Alison Bender.
Hello, guys. Hey, do you know, I have a bit of form doing this, because when I was at the World Cup, I agreed to do an interview after the Croatia game. I was a bit cocky, I think, because I thought that we were going to win. And then I lined up a bunch of interviews. And then the next day I woke up and I just felt so glum because I had to go and speak about how England were out of the World Cup. And I've done it again. So, do you know, though, I love the fact there's a lot of girls involved in this podcast. And, you know, the feminist in me is like, yes, girl power. Let's do a girl podcast. And I listened to your one after your result against West Ham. Everyone was pretty glum after that one. So I reckon this is going to be quite different.
It's definitely going to be just a little bit different. And we promise we won't get too cocky. That's for sure, especially with our season. So let's get stuck into the game. And first, I want to get, I don't know if you were at the game, Alison, Amanda and Kevin were at the Emirates on Saturday. A contrasting performance. And we'll start with Super Kev, the striker. And getting that player perspective right away. Kev, a performance against West Ham that was woeful and nobody wanted to talk about, and a contrasting performance against Chelsea. What was the difference?
Everything was really on the front foot. It was great to see Aubameyang and Lacazette play as a two up top, supported brilliantly by Aaron Ramsey in the hole. They were on the front foot from the off, and they were really pressuring Chelsea high and wouldn't let them out, wouldn't let them get away with it. Chelsea couldn't play the longer ball, obviously, to Hazard because he doesn't have the size. So that was a chance for Arsenal to really tee off on them. And let's be honest, it should have been over in 25 minutes. Yeah. Arsenal were awesome, especially in the first 45 minutes.
You know, Amanda, when I was on with Adam Catterall on TalkSport last week, I said to him that if Hazard played in that role up front, it would be advantage Arsenal big time. It feels like Chelsea are less effective when he's in that role. They don't have that out and out striker. It's an area that could end up costing them top four. Do you think being there, was that the difference? Or do you think the biggest difference was the job Ramsey did on Jorginho and suffocating that midfield from your point of view?
I think going back to West Ham, I was at West Ham. I do feel like our team is bipolar. I cannot believe it's the same team. Although, to be fair, the three of us did predict a win. I went 3-1, you went 3-2, and Kev was 2-1. So, Kev, you were very close this week. I had no fears all week, and I don't know why. I just felt that they would 5:30 under the lights, Saturday evening, we're going to go for it. And it's the three P's for me. It was pressed, it was pressured, and it was precision. And we deserved everything that we got. We should have scored more. Kevin's right. It should have been over. Aubameyang needs to take more of his chances. As I keep saying every pod, he reminds me of Andy Cole. 10 chances to get 2 goals. But anyway, we're going to something else. I think Ramsey is going to be one of the biggest losses. I do not understand why he's going. To every game, I think to myself, why? Why is he going? I think every player earned their wages on Saturday. For me, man of the match was Koscielny, without any shadow of a doubt. Socrates, whatever you say his name is, Socrates, was again, you know, near on man of the match as well. I felt we wanted it. And as Kev said, the minute we kicked off, that was it. It was all us. It was the best 45 minutes I've seen, even better than Spurs, if I'm honest.
I would agree with Amanda. I think that was our most complete professional performance. And I think the clean sheet has a lot to do with that. And Alison, we bring you in, obviously, from the Chelsea perspective and seeing how opposing fans view Arsenal. Because right now, you know, through that unbeaten run, everyone started fearing us a little bit again. And I say the word fearing loosely. It was just a little tougher to play us. And perhaps we weren't the pushover that we've been against Wenger. So from your point of view as a Chelsea fan going into this, did you have any fears? Was the Hazard issue up front, you know, kind of the most glaring thing? Talk us through that little bit and how Chelsea fans were looking ahead to this game and were you expecting to beat us?
Yeah, no, you're quite right. You said so many things I want to respond to. Speaking about your three P's, I think our three P's were poor, pathetic, and there's one word that I don't even want to say. To be fair, I think the Hazard thing's frustrating all Chelsea fans because we can see it and we don't really understand why the manager can see it. And I've spoken to a couple of Chelsea players, Rudiger and Ross Barkley, and they didn't really want to call the manager out, but they obviously feel the same way as well. And they're kind of thinking, you know, why on earth are you playing one of the most creative and attacking players as a striker? You've got Olivier Giroud on the bench. I know he's not, you know him well, obviously. Even in the World Cup, he didn't score. Morata, you know, really not feeling it either. But you just think, surely there's something else you can do and not sort of isolating Hazard there. And then, you know, when you read some of the stats of the game as well. And I had an interview with, I was actually had a whole media day down at Arsenal just before, and I had an interview with Granit Xhaka. And that was one of the questions I put to him, you know, if Hazard plays as a false nine, does that give you, you know, advantage Arsenal? And he said, he pretty much said absolutely. And I think when they saw that team sheet and they realised that he was playing in that position, I think, you know, as Kevin said, you played on the front foot. I think a lot of that would be that you can see that Chelsea are to be got at when you see, and obviously Kante playing out of position as well. There's just so many things you can say about that game. But I think, you know, the Chelsea players just don't seem comfortable like that. I wasn't at this game, actually, but I watched a couple of recent games for Chelsea. I watched the Watford game and the Saints game. And pretty much the game plan seems to be just look for Eden Hazard and pass him the ball. And no one else seems to want to sort of do anything themselves. Everyone looks a bit fearful. And I wonder whether it's a little bit like Jose Mourinho at Manchester United, whether the manager's kind of given the players just too many things to think about and they just want to go out there and play their own game. And obviously, when you hear the manager after the match with the comments that he made, you know, speaking in his own language so he didn't want to be mistranslated and saying that he feels that they've got a mentality problem. No fight. I mean, it's really worrying stuff. And, you know, to say that your players are hard to motivate when that's your job, things are looking really bad. And just sorry, just going back to what you said about your unbeaten run, you're so right, because I think over the years, we've always said a little bit about Arsenal. You know, it's not a fortress anymore, the Emirates, and people go there and they know that there aren't any leaders and all the rest of it. I mean, you've heard it all before. But once you started that run going, I think people were starting to kind of look up and think, wow, maybe, you know, maybe this team of players have got a bit of fight in them after all. And this game really showed that. And I think it's really sort of put Arsenal on the map. And obviously the fact that it could have been a 9-point lead for Chelsea and now it's just 3 points, it's absolutely massive in that race at the top four.
Alison, I've got to jump in here. And look, I'm an Arsenal fan, but I think you're being a bit unfair on Chelsea. Considering it's Sarri coming in, it's his first season, a bit like Emery. They're finding their feet in the Premier League. The way you started off the season was sensational. and winning a lot of games. You didn't lose any to start with, and you went on a run yourselves.
Yeah.
But the issue you guys always had was to get that striker.
We just don't have a striker. Yeah. I mean, you're right, Kevin. But I'm probably being a bit harsh at the moment, and it does feel like very raw at the moment after that defeat. But I think the biggest problem is that we all know, you can see it, it's so obvious. And I think Chelsea fans are actually pretty forgiving. I mean, we were the same with Torres when he went on a run without scoring any goals. Shevchenko as well. We do actually give strikers a little bit of time to try and settle. But I think for whatever reason, it was pretty obvious it's just not working out with Morata. And the Chelsea fans can see it. And I guess Sarri's hands are tied a bit. I mean, what can he do? There aren't too many options. But I think there's some comments actually that are about to come out from Hazard that I'd be really interested in seeing the full report. It's going to be in France. An interview given to France Football. And I don't know whether it was sort of said a bit tongue in cheek, but it was Hazard kind of basically saying, like, all the managers seem to have a bit of a problem with me in the fact that they want me to do more. He said, I had it with Conte. I had it with Jose Mourinho. And I don't know whether, like you say, like it's a, you know, maybe it's a throwaway comment that he was saying about.
He's going.
Well, can you blame him in a way? No. I mean, when you've got a player who's probably behind Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, and then, you know, he's being asked to do things that he doesn't want to do, and it's not getting the best out of him. And he's such a great lad. I've interviewed him so many times, and he loves his football, and he's a nice guy. But, you know, when it comes to your football career, your numbers, your trophies, Kevin, you know, you want to go and win everything there is to win out there, and you can't be held back.
Yeah, I personally think Eden Hazard, and I'm sure you'll agree, and I'm sure Sophie and Amanda will agree, actually, that his talent is wasted with his back to goal.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wasted. He needs to be on a half turn, going at players.
He's brilliant.
Terrorising. That's when he terrorises players, isn't it? That's when... And this is where Chelsea fans are losing faith in the coach a little bit, because when you have a player like him... You know, not so much us with Ozil, because Ozil hasn't really performed in the big games. And Hazard at times, I think, feels overrated. But that's because when he's played out of position, he's really poor. And then you question his quality. And I think that's been the biggest challenge that he's had at Chelsea, Amanda.
Yeah, it is. But I just want to go back to something that you mentioned, Alison. I'm just going to swap it back to Arsenal a second, because I think our listeners would really enjoy this.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
You went to meet Xhaka and Emery, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
And there's something I'd like to pick up on. I want you to talk to us all about what happened. But you mentioned something about Xhaka does read the social media. Is it Xhaka or
yes.
Emery? Yeah, Xhaka. Can you just tell us what was, you know, what your discussion was?
Yeah, definitely. This is a bit of an exclusive for you guys as well, because I don't think this has gone out yet. But it was a really fascinating day for me, I have to say, because I don't know what it is about Xhaka, but he really does divide the fans' opinions. Half of them think he's one of the most vital cogs in the Arsenal wheel. And I know a lot of people just think they're not having him at all. And what I was interested, you have to be a little bit sort of brave or cheeky asking some of these questions, because it's, you know, it's a bit tough sort of asking them. But I wanted to sort of get a sense from him whether he realizes that. And I was just so impressed with his honesty, because he actually sort of really, really opened up and he said, you know what, I know what fans think about me. I'd be lying if I said I didn't read the social media. And, you know, what can I do about it? I'm a player. But one thing I can tell Arsenal fans is I absolutely try my best. I do everything.
Oh.
I had to bring up that terrible statistic, which is embarrassing, that, you know, I think his mistakes have led to the most goals of any player in the Premier League, which is awkward. But he took it on the chin, and he was really, you know, he said, you know, he's aware of it. He said, I don't much like statistics. Of course he did. But he said that, I think he sort of alluded to the fact that one of the reasons that happens is because he's always there. He's trying his best. He's, you know, and I think he knows he's got a long way to go, and he's got to cut out those mistakes. He knows that. But there were a few things that impressed me. For, what is he, a 26-year-old? He's had such an interesting family background. I wasn't aware of all of it, actually, and it all came out in this interview. But he spoke to me about how when his mum and dad met, they'd only been together, I think, 3 months, and his dad was taken away as a political prisoner. And he was in prison for 3.5 years. And he said his mum stood by his side, and he really opened up about the fact that he felt like his mother is such a strong woman. He said, I don't know how many women that would have done that in those circumstances. And he says that for him and his brother, that is their biggest motivation in life. Mm. And he said, whenever anything, you know, my life happens to me and it's hard, I always think, come on, you know, look at what my dad did and look at what my mum did as well. I like the way he throws it back to his mother as well. And I was really taken away and by the way that he spoke about it. He actually did the interview in German, so it was translated. But I could really feel the emotion. And at the end of the interview, he actually came up to me and he said, I really enjoyed doing that. And I think it's really important that people know about my background. And if you want to do some more, I'm happy to come and meet you again and we can talk further about it, which a player's never said.
That is phenomenal. I love that. When you have that connection, or you really connect with a player in an interview and it's not like sound bites and quick, you know, after the game or on the sideline, when you can really sit down with players and connect with them on a human level and they trust you. And clearly, Xhaka grew to trust you in that interview, Alison. So very nice job where he's starting to share, you know, personal anecdotes. And I think sometimes that's what we forget about players, is that they are human, and Kev can attest to it. They have feelings. They get upset. Of course, they read stuff. But to know that Xhaka is reading stuff and seeing that kind of upsets me as an Arsenal fan in a way, because I've been very critical of him too. But we all know that he's a good guy. Has and do you feel like, from the vibe that you got from him, a couple of things? Number one, not that he's been set up to fail in some regards, but since Torreira's come, did he talk about enjoying and thriving under that partnership at all? And the second is the leadership role that Emery's kind of, you know, trusting him to be captain at times for the club. Did he talk about any of those two things?
Yeah, he did, actually. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I'd forgotten about that. He said it was one of the proudest moments, actually, being one of those captains. And he says, because it shows that the, you know, the manager trusts me to go out and have an influence, I think he said. And he also spoke about playing with Torreira. He said that he enjoyed the fact they played lots of games together. And he says that he likes the fact that he's a bit more, Torreira is a bit more defensive, so he can play a bit more with the ball, he was saying. He also said that he really got on with him. They have really great understanding. And he mentioned Guendouzi as well. And just, yeah, how he likes that sort of that general partnership in midfield. And it looks like they're kind of working out that balance of, you know, obviously when one defends more than the other, can, you know, he can have a chance to attack a little bit more. But yeah, he went into quite great detail about that midfield.
Okay, so that's lovely. And you know what? The reason he Brilliant. Likes Xhaka defending is because he's not a defensive midfielder and he's really good on the ball. And I love the fact that, you know, he's got that passion to play, and I know about his background as well. And I'm sad that he reads social media, if I'm honest, because it's not nice what he said. It's just, you know, Alice and I've been going since mid-70s. We didn't have social media. We just had moaning in the car on the way home, sort of thing, and just makes me
it
quite.
It must be hard. You do feel for them, don't you?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I think what they have to
when
do
they're
is
they're that young as well.
Yeah, they have to take the praise and the criticism and ignore both. You know, that's
the
what
one
you have
thing,
to do.
Can I just butt in? Sorry, because I just remembered the one thing that surprised me the most. You girls will all know it, and Kevin as well, I'm sure, because you follow them week in, week out. But I was really surprised to read that of all the players, he is the one who's played more games this season. I think he's only missed one game. The Manchester United game through accumulations of yellows. So that does show sort of his importance in the team. But when you read about what the Arsenal fans say about him, you kind of forget that he's such a main presence, I suppose. It kind of surprised me, I think, that it sort of didn't quite kind of tally quite right.
He is, Alison, and also he was put in defence when we had about 44,000 injuries. He's not a defender.
That's
he
made
shed loads of mistakes, but, you know, I don't think he got blamed for anything. It wasn't his fault. We needed him back in midfield with mm-hmm. Torreira. You know, that's where he plays well. But moving on just slightly now you met Emery. Okay. I was at a presentation with Emery in the summer, just as he joined us, and he came on stage at the Emirates, and I loved him straight away. Don't know if he's a good manager at the time, but I loved his presence and his passion as well. Any manager coming into our club after Arsene Wenger has to be tough. It has to be. There was infighting amongst fans. It was toxic. For me, he's turned it around, okay? We don't feel the toxicity anymore. You know, you lose a game, okay, you are entitled to be upset, that's fine, but it doesn't go over the top anymore. How's he finding it? Did you go into all that with him?
Yeah, it's a funny one. He's one of those characters who he's very sort of steady. He doesn't really like to have a big news line. So I know that the journalists always feel a little bit disappointed when they come out of a press conference with him, just because they love a line and he just won't give it to them. He's that kind of person. I think that there's definitely been a massive change. I remember, wasn't there, I can't remember which game it was, you'll tell me, but when all the fans started singing, we've got our Arsenal back. And there just seemed to be...
Fulham away.
You kind of feel, yes. You feel sort of, you know, something happening with Emery. And yeah, it's a tricky one with a foreign manager as well, because sometimes you think, well, I'd much rather you speak English because you're in our country, blah, 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 and it's important. But then at the same time, you feel like you're lacking a little bit of their personality. And I've certainly felt like that along the way with so many managers. And sometimes it's actually better. In fact, I remember when I was at Chelsea TV, I had like a whole season with Carlo Ancelotti, and I always thought it was a little bit dull. And then I read his autobiography, and he's absolutely hilarious in his own language. I read a translated version, but he's a real comedian. And then I suddenly kind of got to see a different side of him. So sometimes I do think it's important if they sort of speak their own language, just so you can sort of get to have a bit of a feeling.
Alison,
yeah, go on.
So I was going to say, were you not impressed, before you give us the answer to Amanda's question, with Emery saying he watches Peaky Blinders to learn English? Yeah. That's funny. Showed a bit of personality.
It's one of my favourite programmes, Peaky Blinders.
Exactly. It's so funny how they come out with this stuff. But those are the kind of things that you love to hear. And I always do like to ask a personal question just to kind of get a response. I tried to ask him something a little bit cheeky, but he wasn't having any of it. I was kind of trying to allude to what he felt about Mesut Ozil, because I'd read somewhere that he said that when he was a player, he'd like lacked courage or something like that. And he was really disappointed in hindsight, looking back at his playing days, and he wished he hadn't been that way. And so I kind of was trying to say to him, so because of that, are you less forgiving of players who have a little bit less courage or something like that? Kind of trying to guide him towards talking about Ozil, but he wasn't going there at all. But like I say, I think he knows exactly where you're going with your question, but he's very sort of calm and gives you a very standard answer. Talked a bit about Sven Mislintat as well, but he basically said that his relationship was normal and nothing's happening. And I think I'm hearing now that he's definitely gone. Is that right?
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, Alison, it's interesting you bring up Sven, because, you know, at Sevilla, he had who I think is one of the most underrated directors of football, probably in the last 15 or 20 years, in Monchi. And you've probably know about Monchi through your time in La Liga and you know, at Real Madrid, and the kind of the players that he accumulated over, you know, a 15-year period. And we're talking about some really great players, you know. I think that he's always worked with a very strong director of football. What are your insights into that? And what do you feel about someone like Emery, who really in his career has had that figurehead, who's been able to work with nimbly, and Arsenal now having to work nimbly in the transfer market? He's lost that kind of guy, and is having to perhaps adapt to an environment that, you know, he didn't enter to when he first took the job at Arsenal in the summer.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because when you've got someone like Arsene Wenger there, he's just completely all controlling, and, you know, he was doing absolutely everything. So obviously, when Emery's come in, there's a completely different structure that he wants to do. And I think, obviously, it's going to take time, like you say, to sort of to build this all up. I always remember, actually, Arsene Wenger saying in those kind of final moments, those final press conferences, he always said, "You'll miss me when I'm gone." And I do to an extent, but I definitely think it was time, and you can see things changing. And, you know, we've seen it at Manchester United as well. When a change comes in, you see, you know, various players trying to impress and that kind of thing. But yeah, you're right. If Emery's been used to working with strong directors of football and you know, people who have real sort of structural decisions and everything, then he's going to want to have a similar thing, I guess. And I'm sure that's what he's speaking with the hierarchy about right now.
Yeah, it's a tough one, real tough one, to have this kind of transition, especially when Mislintat was kind of on a roll, and Kev, like, bringing in the players and the pedigree of the you know, the German league, and understanding and identifying. I think it's an area we're going to have to, you know, fix up pretty quickly, no?
Yeah, look, scouts and stuff like that, come ten a penny. Let's have it right. The quality.
Do they?
Out
do
there.
They though, Kev? Do they?
I reckon they. I believe they do because the talent is all already there, and the market that Arsenal have to be going into can't be unknown. Won't be unknown players. It will be players that people know, but you've got to make the move to go and get them. That's the market Arsenal are going to be into. There's hardly any surprises anymore. Let's be real. Fair enough, he's done a fantastic job at Dortmund, but the scouting network has grown and become more magnified now. So you're not going to be picking up the Kantes anymore and stuff like that. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, Arsenal haven't got the money to go and do that anymore. So what's the point in having him there if he's not in position to make those moves? So that's probably why.
Also, Kev, don't you think this scout, because we've got, I mean, scouting, everyone's going nuts about him leaving, yeah? When in the 70s, 80s and early 90s, we didn't have social media, we didn't know when scouts were coming and going. We didn't know anything. I just think sometimes there's a bit too much information out there and people are getting het up about certain things that they don't really have much knowledge about. Do you know what I mean? I mean, when you were playing, I don't know who the scouts were.
Yeah, but you got to remember, it's sensationalism now.
Yes.
Everything's quick. Everything's on social media. So, you know, the light, he came in a blaze of glory, didn't he, Sven Mislintat? He was going to be the saviour. And now all of a sudden, after, what is it, 15 months or whatever, he's going to be walking out the door. So he came in a blaze of glory and then he's going out in a whimper.
Doesn't mean it's a bad thing, though, does it?
Exactly.
They're not stupid, Arsenal, although sometimes we think they are. There's going to be reasons the change is happening. I just think sometimes we just need to keep faith with the club a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
I think recruitment and having an eye for talent is so much more important in today's game, even when, you know, some scouts don't even go to locations, Kevin. They're watching YouTube videos and all that malarkey. I just think that, you know, it's really important for us going forward to have someone who is smart and who can make great deals because we don't have the money to spend. But to bring this back a little bit to Arsenal, Chelsea, Alisson, a massive, massive result for Arsenal at the weekend, which could very much be and play a huge part in who ends up finishing top four. Although there's another team right now a little bit further up north that's clipping at both of our heels in Manchester United. And some would say they're the ones with all the momentum right now. And, you know, the shifting gear since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's taken over. Who do you see finishing in that top four? How do you see it all shaking out?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think, I mean, the game for Chelsea, that's why it was just so massive for us as well. Because, you know, we could have been 9 points clear and now we're only three. And we've still got to go to the Etihad, we've got to go to Anfield, and we've got to go to Old Trafford. So I'm thinking Chelsea, and not only that, Chelsea are also not looking particularly convincing at the moment. Now, you know, if Higuain comes in, he's got to hit the ground running, which, you know, it's a tricky one in a January transfer. And a player like that, you know, who's not played in the Premier League, it's a very different league, as we're always being told. I kind of think that Chelsea are a little bit on the wane. And when you look at Manchester United, absolutely on fire, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is like completely getting the best out of them. Interesting, actually, I just heard an interview that Wayne Rooney has just given ESPN, and he was saying that he's got a little bit to do with Rashford's kind of form as well, because obviously we've been saying Solskjaer's been speaking to him about his calmness in front of goal and everything. Apparently Rooney's been chatting to him as well and giving him some tips and advice. But clearly all the players look a lot happier. Pogba looks and has said that, you know, he's not in the shadows anymore. This are a team on fire. So I kind of think they've got a bit of advantage at the moment. I also worry, I do still worry, I don't know, guys, whether I'm being unfair here, but I think Arsenal were excellent in this Chelsea game. They really were. And you know, the defence really worked. Koscielny was absolutely sublime. Socrates looked really good. But I don't know, is it papering up the cracks that you don't have the best defence? And obviously, we haven't mentioned yet Hector Bellerin, which is so sad. And
yeah.
I actually got to meet him. What a nice guy. He was doing a feature on the day that I was there. And it was, he was going through his life in football shirts, and they basically had about 30 football shirts all laid out. And the very first one was a Betis shirt. And I think it was because his dad used to play for Betis. And he basically was like going along each shirt and speaking about his life and what each shirt meant to him, which I think is a brilliant idea for a feature. And I don't know whether that will now go out at a different time or whether it already went out. It was for BT Sport, but I just had a little chat with him afterwards, and we sort of joked a bit about his fashion and all the rest of it, because he loves all that, doesn't he? And really nice guy. And it's just so gutting for him and also for Arsenal to lose a player of that quality. And you sort of wonder as well, as the season goes on, how you're going to replace that and him.
I don't think we want to talk about our defence today, Alison.
I'll take Victor Moses.
That's not a bad shout, you know. Because, yes. You know, he did that whole sort of attacking role under Conte, didn't he? The wing-back.
He's a wing-back, not a full-back.
But, yeah, he's perhaps not quite.
But he's adaptable, Kev.
Not a full-back.
You're not having it?
Nope.
I'm adaptable, but I'm no good in defence. So
he's a wing back. He played wing back very well.
Well, wait. If we play three at the back, Victor Moses can't play in that. That was the Conte system.
Yeah, well, but he likes to tinker, doesn't he? We need a.
I know, but we I'm need just a saying
right
for
back.
Now.
We need a proper right back.
Yes.
We need a right back. That's what we need.
We need just a proper defence, Soph. Just a proper defence, please. I don't because I'm happy tonight, but. Just what, Alison, just talk to us, because obviously we are a female-driven pod. Sophie and I started this one last season, and Kev's joined us every game, every pod, which has been fantastic to have him here. Sophie and I have grown up with football. I used to watch Kev play, so I've been going since, like, mid-70s, as I said. I've never experienced any sexism at football. Only the last couple of years on social media, funny enough, and I've really not taken any notice because it doesn't bother me in the slightest. I've probably been to more games than most men anyway. So
yeah.
I don't have an issue with it at all. And I love the fact that there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women in who go to games now. When I went early 80s, as I said, late 70s, there was about five women I knew and Maria, of course. Now there's, you know, thousands, and it's brilliant. It's great. But the media, there never was anyone. It was just, and I never really thought about it. The media was very different back then. Then obviously Sky started and then bang, it's all bloomed, isn't it? How did you get into it? How do you find it? And is there any sexism now, or was there when you started? What was it like?
Do you know, it's a really weird one, because I think nowadays we, like you say, we've got social media, and I think it absolutely brings out the worst in everyone. I mean, the kind of stuff that you see on social media, I'm actually fairly lucky in the fact that I don't get these horrible kind of trolling like you hear some people do. I think the thing with me is I've just never really thought about the fact that I'm a girl in football. I've just thought about the fact that I'm in football and I love it. And when I started out, like you say, there weren't many people, there weren't many girls in the industry at all. I suppose I've been doing it since about, what was it, probably 2003, something like that. And I always actually, I remember a game, I was at Real Madrid against Arsenal. I was at Highbury. And that was when you got through, I can't remember, was that quarterfinals of the Champions League? Thierry Henry scored the only goal anyway. And obviously then you went on to lose in the final to Barcelona that season. But you do get the odd kind of thing, but nothing that bothered me at all. Just like what girls are used to on a daily basis. You know what I mean? And I sort of felt like as it became more of a media thing, people started phoning me up and asking me to kind of talk on this debate of sexism in football and stuff. And I didn't really like to get caught up in it, to be honest, because I sometimes think that it can actually make a bad name for us girls. It's like, it's almost better if you just say, well, I love the game. I do this because I enjoy it. And I just sort of don't make a big deal out of it. But yeah, definitely sort of, I don't know, it's almost like nowadays, I think it's a whole lot worse, but I'm sure that's because of social media.
I'm with you on that. As I said, I never experienced it. Growing up, everyone knew I went to football. Most of the people I spoke to were men. It wasn't a big deal. Even now, 20, 30 years later, there's no difference. But I do see a lot on social media of men saying, get back to the kitchen. And I have that fantastic quote, as you know, Alison, that just shuts them out in 10 seconds anyway. And I just feel that it's
some people still think it's funny as well. Like, they actually think it's like it. I've had people sort of say that to me, and then what I tend to do, actually, I quite like sort of responding to the so-called trolls, and actually most of them aren't. They're actually all right, and some of them are trying to make a bit of a laugh, a bit of a joke, engage with you. And often I sort of find if you actually have a conversation, you kind of get to the bottom of it, and then they'll sort of go, oh yeah, actually fair play, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas then some of my male colleagues are like, oh Alison, why do you engage with all those guys? And I'm like, do you know what? Because they're fans who love football, and so do I. And we're just having a conversation. I'm not trying to have an argument. I'm not trying to start a fight. It's just sometimes I think that if you actually, rather than sort of slam someone down or block them, if you actually kind of explain your point, you know, you can actually end up having quite a good chat. Yeah.
And you can educate people as well. That's the whole idea. Educate.
I think. Twitter. Yeah, that's a little bit of a challenge. I mean, even as close as this weekend, I was on the two mics on Friday, and it kind of kicked off with Mike Parry, as it usually does every now and again. And then, you know, I literally got a go back to the kitchen sink comment on Twitter. And my response was, if you want to have a conversation about football, let's do that. If you're going to have that kind of conversation, then, you know, I'm not interested. But it's funny because we've been talking with Kev a lot since these racism issues have come up again this season. You know, we saw Aubameyang be a victim of that in the London Derby. And I don't know what Kev thinks about this, but sometimes I feel like unless something major happens, we all think it's okay. And we all think that, you know, things have moved on, people have moved on. But clearly, even with the racism campaign, we think that it's moved on because someone puts a badge on a captain's, you know, shirt. And it's like, yes, okay, everyone's talking about it, it's out there. But really, when you scratch the surface a little bit, things are okay and they have improved. But how far have we really come? Do you know what I mean? Because you see more women on TV, it feels like it's so much better than it was. And it is. And there are more jobs for women. And of course, all those things are happening. But I also think that, you know, sexism is still going on. Racism is still going on. And unless we're continually educating people, it won't improve as time goes by.
It's just like everything else. Old habits die hard. And when it was back in the 70s, 80s, probably even 90s, the social media platforms wasn't really advanced. Now it's all advanced. Everybody's got an opinion. And I think it's more of a default response about get back in the kitchen, etc. The funny thing I find, you ladies, even just listening to you, I was listening intently. You know your football. You know what you're talking about.
Mm.
And to some men, that actually makes them feel uneasy.
Yeah. It's threatening.
It's funny, yeah, Kevin, because everyone always says, when I say I work in football, loads of people go, oh, you're a man's dream woman. And I'm like, actually, no, you're wrong. Men don't tend to like it, actually, when you know more about football than they do.
Do you know what's funny? I always
say I watch too much football. My husband, he loves football, but he's like, seriously, Alison, we got to watch more football.
Do you know what, Alison? It's funny you should say that. I've had that all the time. People always say, you must be a dream for any man to sit and watch Match of the Day. I said, yeah, but most men want you to sit there eating candy floss, not discussing corners exactly. And offsides and whether Xhaka should be playing and Ozil should be playing. They want you to be the nice little woman in the corner, you know what I'm saying?
Be quiet.
Now we're the ones, you know, I'm always saying let's watch Match of the Day and, you know, who's playing at 4 o'clock on a Sunday. It's part of my world. But
I just say something about the racism? Because it's something really interesting, I think. Because unfortunately, there has always been some racism that exists. And I also feel like we're a little bit afraid to have a voice. And particularly as a woman going to football often on my own, I hear a lot of racism on the tubes, on the transport, at the grounds. And it disgusts me, but I feel so afraid. What can I do on my own, little old me? And I kind of feel like what's happening now, which is really good, is because people won't accept it. And you know, people are calling people out on social media. They're calling people out publicly. They're banning fans. It's given me just that little bit of courage to actually say, like out loud to be like, you cannot say that, that's unacceptable. And then hopefully mm-hmm. people will join in and back you. And I do think there is something happening this season. I don't know whether it's enough, but it's a start. And, you know, I love the fact that a small bunch of a Chelsea journalist has actually started something amongst the Chelsea fans, you know, saying we want to be proud of our fans. We don't want to be embarrassed by the small minority who are letting the club down. I mean, Chelsea fans are some of the worst. I've been harassed myself outside games just for asking for an interview. I think now suddenly their own journalists, Chelsea's own journalists are saying, I'm calling you out. I'm going to write an article about you. I'm getting you banned. So take that, which is really powerful. And that's something that you never would have seen. And he's actually getting abused, sadly, this guy Dan Levine, for doing it. But brilliant. Fair play to him for doing it. And it's working.
Isn't that just so sad to know that whenever someone wants to stand up, he starts getting abused for trying to call out the perpetrators.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible. And you have to be really strong. I DM'd him actually to say, you know, well done and congratulations and keep on. I'll support you. And he sort of said, don't worry, Ali, I've got very thick skin. And I'm like, but that's sad that you have to go to bed at night knowing that you've been abused by your own fans, for goodness sake. I mean, it's awful. And what you've been through as a player, it's totally unacceptable. But yeah, how great that this is happening. And I do think there's a bit of a mini revolution happening right now, hopefully.
Alison, what do you think? Because obviously, as Arsenal fans, we weren't proud that some idiot threw a bottle at Dele Alli's head. You know, yes, we're rivals and we don't endorse that. Fans like us don't want to see that happening. No. You know, and Spurs fans who are sensible don't want to see Aubameyang be treated that way. What do you think Chelsea fans' views were on the Raheem Sterling incident? And that kind of was a very ugly scene. And like you've said, a lot of things have been happening at Chelsea over the years, as they have at other clubs and especially in Europe. What's your take on that and Chelsea fans' take on that?
Yeah, it's just utterly embarrassing. And it's like, as a club, you want to be united and you want to be proud. I think the one thing that you can say is it is a small minority. Thank goodness you can say that. But yeah, I remember feeling really utterly ashamed and like embarrassed. I don't think I even commented on it, you know, because when you go on social media and start commenting on it, and suddenly the weight of everyone comes back onto you and you feel, you know, you almost you're attacked personally as well. And you know, I can't even remember now, but I think, you know, if you're sort of busy and you're going up, you sort of think, I actually can't be bothered to deal with the reaction that this is going to have, which again is terrible. But, you know, it's just so good that like the authorities did something about it. It's good that Chelsea did something about it. And, you know, we can start to see an end to these kind of things.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, deducting team points, hitting them where it hurts. You know, I think, you know, things like that, introducing punishment like that and bringing the authorities into it. Because if someone does that to you on the street, you're calling the police. So definitely. All right, let's move on real quick. We've got just another few minutes here with Alison Bender. Alison, where can everyone find you on social media? Let us know that right now before we get you out here on our little quick fire round.
Oh, cool. So you can follow me on Twitter, which is Ali Bender TV, and also on my Instagram, which is Ali Bender One. I always forget that one. Yeah, Ali Bender One.
Lovely.
And I'm trying to put all the interviews I do, I'm trying to actually like get the quotes up as well now, which takes a little bit of extra effort because sometimes they go out, a lot of my stuff goes out globally, but I sort of think it's nice for people here in England as well to, you know, to be able to sort of see those quotes after they've gone out. So I'll be doing that, like I say, with Granit Xhaka, with Emery and any other interviews that I do. And hopefully when I go back and speak to Xhaka again as well.
Excellent. And we'll share that with all of the Gooner Nation on the Highbury Squad accounts, of course, as you know. Now, Amanda and Kevin are going to be really happy because I'm actually on location today, which means I don't have my cowbell, which they really don't like at all. And Alison, you'll probably be thankful that you don't have to listen to the cowbell. But I have some quick fire questions for you. Just kind of, you know, soundbite answers. Amanda and Kev can join in as well.
Oh.
Just to kind of get your take here. Right.
Can I just say something funny? I do this every single week to footballers. And I always get them to do one word answers, but it's horrible when it's on the other foot. I'm like, oh.
All right, then, here you go. Now, this one is a little bit of okay, so you interviewed Pelé and you interviewed Maradona.
Yeah.
Who are you picking out of the two, Pelé or Maradona?
Oh, it's got to be Maradona, to be fair.
In terms of interview or just quality of interview?
Oh, as a player.
Because it's not human.
Oh, right, I'm thinking as a player. Oh, if we're talking as a person, I had a much better interview with Pelé than I did Maradona because Maradona doesn't speak English. So that's easy enough. But as a player, I'd go Maradona.
And Amanda and Kev, are you Pelé or Camp Pelé or Maradona?
I know Pelé all day long.
I would be Pelé because Maradona's, I would be Pelé, funny enough.
Three World Cup wins, winning the World Cup at 17.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That is true.
It would be Pelé for me as well.
And one of the greatest World Cup teams captain that was involved was the main man, that 1970 team.
I think you can properly say, can't you, Kev, a legend.
Yeah.
A total legend. Yeah. And Kev, I interviewed the late, great Carlos Alberto when he was out here doing stuff for the New York Cosmos. And the words he had for Pelé, as you can imagine, were ridiculous. And he actually, being a Brazilian, picked Messi over Ronaldo. And he wasn't a huge fan of Neymar. I'll have to tell you a little bit more about that. But anyway, this isn't turning into quickfire. Right, so that's what happens with football. You start on one thing and then you get on something else. I digress. I'm sorry.
I was also, by the way, lucky enough to actually see Maradona play in the flesh. But only because during the Euros, he did like a little kind of fun game. And unfortunately, Pelé's health wasn't good enough to get involved. But that would have been brilliant to see both of them in action at the same time.
God, yes.
But it's not quite the same when they're not at their peak, is it? But still, I can say
not at all. Okay, your best ever interview.
Oh, you're going to love this one. Petr Cech.
Oh, you're a bit biased on that one as well, aren't
he's
you?
He's the lovely
legend,
guy.
Legend.
Yes.
He's such a legend. And he's so funny. He comes and talks to you about all kinds of things. I've had conversations with him about chess. I've had conversations with him about cookery. He's a bit of an all-rounder, is Petr.
Yeah, he speaks like seven languages, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's so smart. Ridiculously smart. Okay, what's more fun, working on TV in England or in the US?
Oh, the US. It's so glitz and glamour. I love it. I'm not going to lie.
All right. Would you prefer English football or Spanish football, seeing as you've worked for Real Madrid?
Oh, do you know, I do love Spanish football. There's something grittier about English football. So I love that kind of like hard, proper football style. But there's something very exotic about Spanish football.
All right. Here's one for all three of you. And I think if Jose Mourinho wasn't Manchester United manager, people would be having this conversation right now. Is Marcus Rashford better than Harry Kane?
No.
Good question. I don't think he is. Not right now.
Is it?
Kev?
Is Marcus Rashford's got more ability than Harry Kane? Harry Kane's a better goal scorer.
Yeah, I'll go with Kevin on that one.
All right. Who's going to win the league, Liverpool or City?
I've said Liverpool for 4 months.
Liverpool, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Liverpool. Is there time?
Kev's not going to say it out loud. Go on, Kev.
City are going to win it. You watch and see.
All right.
Kev, you have to say that.
See, so much different without the bell. You know the bell makes this so much
better. No, I don't have to
say
it. Listen, can Liverpool win it? Yes, they can. Liverpool can win the league. Will they win it? I don't think they will. I think City have got the better quality in their squad.
All right, Alison, if you want to endear yourself to the Arsenal nation even more, we're going to get you out on this one. Who finishes top four, Arsenal or Chelsea?
I think it's going to be Arsenal now, to be honest with you.
Get in there!
Well, look, you've got Aubameyang and Lacazette on fire, and who have we got to score our goals?
Yeah, but hold on, what about United?
Is
there enough football to go yet?
Yeah, there's a lot of football to go.
I think United are going to finish third.
Yeah, but he might take a bit of time to adapt, Kevin. That's the thing.
He knows that system. It's the system that Sarri needs him in.
Yeah.
He knows the system like the back of his hand.
I do have faith, by the way. I know I've said a lot of negativity, but I do have some faith in Sarri. I think he does need a bit of time. But yeah, it's just, it's a little bit of a difficult moment. And do you know what? Predictions will make fools of us all, because it's just so hard to call, isn't it, at the moment? But it's
well,
Alison,
we've been on a bit of a run, if we'd like to admit, you know, ourselves, Amanda, Kev, and I've made some bold predictions that have been correct over the last few weeks. Yes.
So what are you calling then? Do you have to say Arsenal because you're an Arsenal pod?
No. You should hear me, Alison. Nope. I get slaughtered for saying when we're going to lose and even draw, but no, I always stand by what I say.
So who what's your gut then?
My gut is that we will be fifth. We won't be fourth. It'll be Chelsea or United. We've got to go to the Etihad. And unfortunately, we just can't play out how we did on Saturday night every game. You know, we've got a massive game Friday night with United. Then we've got Cardiff. Then we've got City away. By then, you know, we could be 4 or 5 points behind everybody. So I know I've said fifth, but I want to win the FA Cup. So that's what I'm going for. But I believe Liverpool will win it. I've said it 3 months ago. I thought Liverpool will win it. I don't think they'll Liverpool it up, as you call it, but I don't
call
think
me
so.
Crazy.
They've kind of learned. They've learned by now, haven't they?
They've made
the mistakes. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's there's a long way to go. I actually have a sneaky feeling it'll be City, Liverpool, United, then Tottenham, and we will both miss out on top four, and we will meet in the Europa League final, and we will win and go to the Champions League.
That would be even funnier. I'll take that, Soph.
Excellent. Alison,
I'll come back on the pod again and we can commiserate each other.
Yes.
You're going to have to. By the time the season is out, you're going to have to come back on. It's been an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you so much for your insights and sharing all of your Arsenal stories with us. And we would love to have you back on again.
Thank you.
You've been just a dream guest. And thank you so much for coming on.
Cheers, guys.
Lovely talking to you, Alison. Thanks,
and
darling.
You, Kev. Take care.
Oh, thanks, Alison. We appreciate
bye.
It. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right, we've got United, haven't we, Friday night? Soph, what's your prediction?
Yes. You know what? FA Cup, I fancy us. We're at home. I think they've been on a roll and they're due a loss. So I'm going to go a nice 3-1 to us.
Okay. Kev?
Same score, 2-1 as before. Same score, 2-1.
You fancy it? Okay, I think you're going 2-1. What did you say, Soph?
3-1.
I'm going 3-2 Arsenal. Oh, I think it could be one of those games, yeah. They can score.
Could go either way. It could go either way.
Yeah, it could. But I think we're going to win this. I think, again, we do very well, Emirates, in the evening with the lights and the atmosphere.
Yeah, and I think that both teams are going to put out strong squads.
I think so.
I think we're both going to go for it.
Can I just say something? I just want to say about one thing about Saturday.
Yes.
I always wait to the end of the game, especially on Saturday. I wanted to clap everybody off and watch everything that went on. I had tears in my eyes what Olivier Giroud did. He went round the grounds, clapping everyone, and then ran towards the North Bank. I took a picture of this. And held his heart and clapped for us. I mean, it was obviously that he wanted to say thank you and I love you. He'll always be an Arsenal boy. And as I tweeted, you can take the boy out of Arsenal. But honestly, it was lovely. It completely on his own going up to the North Bank, and I loved it. And I thought, you know what? Good on you. Because you're not going to be loved by Chelsea fans doing that. But it's totally understandable.
What did you think of Arsenal fans' question to both of you, who said it was the juxtaposition of cheering for Giroud and then our manager getting booed for making a substitution, taking Lacazette off? Do you think it was right for Arsenal fans to sing Giroud's name out at the top of their lungs the way they did? And what do you think about the Arsenal fans who came into criticism for
that? Okay. When they started singing Giroud's name during the game, I said to my cousin, what is everyone doing? You do this after the game, not during the game. He's a Chelsea player. I don't agree with it. And everyone around me was singing, everyone. And I was like livid. And I had a conversation with a close friend of mine on Twitter and we had to agree to disagree. She thought it was fine and I don't. Booing Emery, no, I'm booing any of it. I get it because we all just get frustrated that he takes Lacazette off. Never boo him in a million years. For me, you sing Giroud's name after the game. The whole ground can sing it, but not during it, I'm afraid.
Kev?
I'm right with you, Amanda, on that one.
Good.
Yep, you definitely don't sing his name during the game. We want to bury him.
Yep.
during the game. We want to bury him after the game. Fair enough. Everything's off the table then. He can clap us and we could sing his name and all hunky-dory, nicey-nicey, but not during the 90 minutes or 94 minutes. We want to bury him.
Yep.
A couple of other little laundry list items that I wanted to get out of the way for the both of you. The loss of Bellerin, gutting, really bad. We need to buy a right back. Ashley Maitland-Niles, I don't think. Again, it's square peg, round hole, guys. What do you think?
Well, it's not fair on him, is it?
No, it's not.
No.
Your Maitland-Niles to be playing there, and it's not his natural position. Can he? He can cover there. Yes, he can, but he's not a natural fullback. So, you know, I think Unai Emery brought him on in the midfield, which is his favoured position. And then Bellerin goes and gets injured, which is tragic. And we all wish him well, wish him a speedy recovery, although it's going to be a long one. And then Maitland-Niles had to go back to right back, you know, to cover it. So I think we need a specialist now. We need to get somebody in. Lichtsteiner, I think the Premier League's a bit too high tempo for him right now. It's this stage in his career. So we need to really make a move. Jenkinson can always cover there, but he's not the answer. We need to make
a move. No, he's not. He's not. Okay, and another quick one. We can't have the week go out without mentioning this. Cech announced his retirement from football. We came up a little bit earlier in the podcast with Alisson as well. What a legend of the game, not only for Chelsea, also for Arsenal, and the perfect professional, no?
Yes, very much so. Complete. He's got the respect of everybody, hasn't he? Around. He's played such a long time. He's won everything in the game. You know, domestic level and the Champions League, etc. So what a fantastic stalwart and what a fantastic way to bow out at being at Arsenal. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Love him.
Right, Amanda, wouldn't you like to see him stay at the club in a nutshell, right?
He's got to stay on. He's not going to, I doubt it, but he's been good for us. Go on.
I've got a question. This time last week, There was murders coming out about we don't create anything, we don't do this, we're missing Mesut Ozil. Where is all that talk gone?
He's coming for you.
You weren't at West Ham. I was, right? We needed him there. He should have been playing. He then brings him and obviously brings him back into the squad and he's on the subs bench. And you don't know if he would have come on because of the injury. He had to bring on Maitland-Niles, whoever he brought on Saturday. So he had the three subs used.
He brought on Elneny before.
Yeah, but that was for different. Oh, right. All I'm saying is, Kev, no, we didn't need him on Saturday. But there are games where we do need him and he should be playing. So don't come at me. Because if we're 0-0 on Thursday, on Friday night, with 25 minutes to go, he should be playing. He should be on.
And you said to me, Kev, over the weekend, we can't perform like Chelsea week in, week out.
No, we can't. But you're missing the point, you see, ladies. The point of the matter is, it should not even be a question. He should be in the team. He should be one of the first names on the team sheet. Not, oh, we're going to need him somewhere down the line.
What were you going on about then? So why are you criticising us for wanting him in the team?
I'm confused.
No,
I said there was all this hullabaloo about Ozil not being in, we can't create. And then now that we've won 2-0, I don't hear anything.
Well, obviously, we won 2-0 and players stepped up, right, and played a game. Not only everything clicked, it was the best performance of the season so far. And therefore, according to Emery and his philosophy, Ozil wouldn't start in a game like this, but he was on the bench to help us if the game didn't go that way. And that was Amanda's point last week and most weeks, is against West Ham, he could have made a difference. We didn't need him at the weekend.
Don't fancy him. That, Let's have it right. Yeah. He don't fancy him.
Yeah. I know he doesn't fancy him, but you know what? Against West Ham, we all fancied him because he could have come on and maybe made a difference. We're not saying
he... our chances, would have beaten West Ham.
Well, that comes back to what Amanda says about Aubameyang. Yeah. And this is 100% correct. He needs 10 chances before he scores one.
It's not just Aubameyang. Aubameyang weren't the only one who missed chances.
Yeah, come on. Right, Kev, every game.
He's missed more than Laka. Come
he
on.
He has. And you know what? I love Aubameyang. Sophie and I love him. But we're being sort of opinionated about this now because we're seeing this week after week, Kev. Come on. You know, I've said about Andy Cole every pod. I'm boring people with it. But I feel like it's such a shame he doesn't even take half his chances. He's such a great... I love him. I love him. And Lacazette, I love them all. I do. When they played like they did on Saturday night, we can beat anybody. But we don't play like that every week. I mean,
Hold on. In a game like that, with what Amanda's saying, in a tight game where you need, a goal, who do you want it to fall to right now, Lacazette or Aubameyang? Lacazette,
of course,
because Aubameyang needs a few chances. That's where I think she's coming from, Kev. Yeah, I mean, you're a striker who's used to taking his chances right off the bat, Kev. But not every striker is like that, right?
Look. Aubameyang's a top scorer.
He is a top scorer, but he needs a few chances to get the goals.
Well, there you go. He might need a few chances, but he's a top goal scorer. So,
but one-on-one, nil-nil, last minute of the game, chance falls to a striker.
Do you know what's amazing?
You're amazing, Kev.
The top scorer at Arsenal is getting criticised by my colleagues on Ivory Squad. I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Because he should have taken his chances at West Ham. What I'm saying is, Kev, I love him.
Get over it.
Criticising him, we want him out the squad. Of course we don't. He starts
every game
for me. He's
just telling me
you'd
rather chances fall to Lacazette.
Well, yeah, but yes. At the moment I get what Sophie's saying. All right, if you're going to say it, I've got more confidence in Lacazette in front of goal than Aubameyang. There we go. I've said it.
Last chance, last gasp. I want the ball with Lacazette right now, not Aubameyang, to bury a chance in the last seconds if we're going to win a game. That's right now. That's how I feel.
Yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? How many chances did he have against Tottenham? And he took that, you know, that second one especially, bang, straight in the net. Leave him alone.
Oh,
it's all in the striker's day.
As if you know.
Let's let the striker have the last word. Because, he knows a little bit about this. Just know Tad about scoring goals, whatever. I mean, you know, good stuff as usual, you guys. Brilliant. Thanks to Alison Bender again for coming on the show. Another happy podcast. Well, not as happy as last week. Last week wasn't good, but this one was. Chelsea 2-0. Let's hope for a victory against United in the FA Cup. And let's hope for a few loan signings in January. And Amanda?
Can we just add something there?
You can add whatever you want, Super Kev.
No, from all of us. This is from all of us to all the people who give us such good feedback. Thank you very much. We really appreciate the feedback you give us about the Highbury squad and listening to it and stuff. I think that's really important for us. Don't you, ladies?
Oh, yes.
We do. Absolutely. We can't do it.
Every tweet, every comment on the platform they listen to. You know, we're a small pod, aren't we? So we just, you know, we're passionate football fans. You don't have to be female or male. Everyone's welcome to listen to this. And I just love the fact that we have Super Kev with us, even though sometimes he does talk a little bit.
Now, go easy on our Super Kev.
Because I saw you last week. I don't have to be nice to you for a bit.
It's too funny. Listen, without the people out there, and I'd like to give a shout out to Amanda, who keeps our social media ticking. And I've been very busy at work this season, and Amanda has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting. She's amazing, and she's, always on top of stuff. And so I just want to thank my podcast sister for taking a lot of the heavy lifting from from me this season. And Super Kev, you have been a dream, to be quite honest with you. And seeing you guys bounce and interact on Twitter with everyone, getting stuck into conversations. I mean, we've got Super Kevin Campbell, whose insights every single week give it to us from a player perspective. And I just think that provides our listeners with a unique angle that not a lot of other Guna podcasts have. And I think it's really cool. But,
and you give it, and right, you know, so, what gives us out, you know, Kev, thank you for giving us your time.
Yes.
I know you're a busy man and you're always available, which is fantastic. So we really appreciate that.
Well, you keep me rushing, don't you?
I know. Rushing around.
Rushing to get on to try and get on.
Because we're worth it. Soph and I are worth it.
We are. We're definitely worth it. We're definitely worth it. And I'd just like to say, before I hand it over to Amanda for the exit, today, we were talking about racism earlier. Today in the United States is Martin Luther King Day.
Aww.
And I can't let the day go by without acknowledging one of the greatest men to have walked this earth in terms of bravery, boldness, and just the message that he personified so many years ago that rings true in all of our ears to this day. So to Mr. King, we bow and thank you for all that you did and sacrificed. And hopefully, guys, you know, his message continues for every generation beyond ours, and then some.
Hear, hear. Well said.
A brilliant
and Amanda?
Yep, I'm coming. Always Arsenal!